a grocery store mistaking her for pregnant many times. Sometimes it took place in September, sometimes October. In her autobiography, which she wrote in her mid-80s, she recalled the Jessica Mitford article coming out in the early 1980s. I found it in Mitford's own archive. It was published in 1967. I never did find where she originally said, "It's choice, not chance, that determines your destiny." If I could verify a story from outside accounts, I did. Otherwise, I went with the version that seemed the most accurate from my research. I was not reporting this book undercover. The company knew I was working on a book about Weight Watchers and cooperated with my research, as did group leaders and some members. But everyone deserves privacy, especially in the ups and downs of dieting, so I have changed several names and some characters in the book are composites. A few passages have appeared previously in other publications, and timelines have been condensed or shifted. Prologue. It's choice, not chance, that determines your destiny. Jean Nidich. Jean Nidich woke up one morning in September 1961 feeling sylph-like. "Did you know you could weigh 214 pounds and have a thin day?" she would later ask crowds who came to see her speak. She put on a muumuu, a dress she considered a fat woman's boon because it hung nicely over everything and in the pocket she could squirrel away pistachios. The tag on the dress read size 10. In reality, Jean wore a size 44, roughly equivalent to a 20 in modern vanity sizing, but she'd had a seamstress remove the tags from her clothing and replace them with smaller, more cheering sizes. Her driver's license weight was 145 pounds, which she hadn't been since high school, but nobody weighed you at the DMV. Jean tied a ribbon in her hair. She walked through Little Neck to the supermarket where she passed rows of Quisp cereal and stocked up on graham crackers for her young sons. She lingered in the sweets aisle, filling her cart with bright yellow boxes of the delicious, pillowy, chocolate-covered marshmallow cookies called Malamars. These were what she called her Frankenstein, a favorite treat and nemesis and the real reason she'd come to the store. She'd taken to hiding them in the hamper in her bathroom. She would sneak in, lock the door, and consume three satisfying boxes at a time. She tried to make a joke out of it. One cookie plus one cookie equals 11. Afterward, she always promised herself she'd quit Malamars, but her resolve never lasted more than a few days. That September morning, Jean found herself back at the supermarket, stocking up once again. She would simply tell the checker the boxes of cookies were for her children. It was a cycle that she thought she'd never break. Being fat was just unlucky, and despite that, Jean felt like she had done well. She was 38 years old, happily married to a nice husband who drove a bus and who was fatter than she was, which meant she could still feel small and ladylike. She had two healthy sons, ages 5 and 10. What more could Jean Nidich of Queens, New York in 1961 reasonably ask for? Then Jean spotted a woman she'd met on occasion in the neighborhood, standing over by the cantaloupes. She hadn't especially liked her when they'd been introduced, but Jean was a good housewife and a purposefully outgoing person. She figured that if she was going to be fat, at least she had to be friendly to make up for it. "Jean, you look so wonderful," the woman told her. "Did you have a good summer?" Jean, flattered, answered that she had. She thought not of sun and sand, but of the concession trucks that made their way along the streets of Little Neck, selling ice cream, donuts, pizza, and sandwiches, trucks that she'd run to catch up to, something only kids were supposed to do. "You look so marvelous," the woman said again, looking her up and down. "What do you do?" To say that it was a moment that she would never forget is an understatement. It would define and transform the rest of her life. But at the time, Jean, the ultimate chatterbox, was dumbstruck. That woman thought she was pregnant. Eventually, Jean stammered something about how she had to go and made her way home in a hasty retreat. "What do I do now?" she kept asking herself as she walked the four blocks home. When she made it back, she stood in front of the full-length mirror behind her bedroom door. It was something she normally tried to avoid. Jean was fine with her reflection in the bathroom mirror,